Everyone, thank you for taking the time and lending your ears to these various conversations. Very excited to share all the guests that I have with you this season. And in order for this season to be a success, I need you guys to help share the word and spread the love of the What Makes You Tick pod. While you're listening, please take a moment to like or subscribe to the podcast wherever you are. And as always, I really appreciate all the help and the support that you guys have given me.
A big thing as well is, like, you know, the big thing I'll also look at with that is one thing I would say, as we've mentioned many times in this podcast, is whatever you do, make sure you have a good relationship with your parents. It drives you mad. I see a lot of people that don't have that. Make sure you have that. So, like, that comes part of being kind. Like, you regret the fact if you don't have a good relationship with your parents. Like, you only have two of them. Like, some people only have one of them. Make sure, like, that's so important to me. Like, it's only the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 years where they've become, like, my best friends. Make sure that's so important. And, like, I think people, like, if you have someone home and if you've got something going on, you'll regret it. Go have a pint with your dad. Go bring your mother out shopping. Go do something with them. Yeah. You regret it. I'm telling you, like.
Jason Hennessy, welcome to the podcast. How are you, pal?
Oh my God, Steve. Thanks good. For having me on. Appreciate
great
it.
Great to have you. Great to have you. This is kind of like a celebratory podcast.
It is,
really,
yeah.
Isn't it? There's a bit of news recently with yourself in terms of new roles, new changes, new opportunities.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit? We might get stuck into it because we'll get into the history of it all.
Yeah, of course. But, good way to start.
Good way to start, Jim.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, so yeah, I left Joe there about 2 months ago. And obviously I've been tipping away at rugby lad since, but I just got offered a job with the URC, United Rugby Championship. So big one, big one.
Like,
didn't think I'd get it, to be honest with you. And it was a very tough interview process, really tough. So, but you know, a big 20-page slide and all that kind of stuff. But obviously I didn't back myself enough, like, because I got it, like, and they're delighted and I'm starting next week. So
congratulations. That's brilliant. Yeah. So Joe isn't his partner. This is Joe.ie, which is a publication for anybody who's not from Ireland or mightn't be aware. Tell us the actual process itself, because did you see the opportunity come up and go for it, or were you asked to kind of listen, maybe put your head in the hat for
yeah.
this and
No, I saw the opportunity. So, like, I got offered redundancy off Joe a couple of months back, and I took it because, to be honest with you, like, I felt like my tenure was up. I'd done my kind of almost 3 years there, enjoyed it. Things were kind of changing inside there, you know, nothing against the company, just didn't suit me. So then I went back to Rugby Lad then and just kind of kept an eye out. And I was kind of like, will I keep doing this? Mm-hmm. Because we'll get to that later, because Rugby Lad has been absolutely flying it, especially throughout the World Cup.
Yeah.
But then that came up and I was like, go for it. Brilliant. You know what I mean? Like, and then, you know yourself.
Well, it, like, the fact that you
unfolded.
Did back yourself, though,
yeah.
which is class, because, like, you put yourself into an uncomfortable situation. I'm sure it was fairly uncomfortable.
Stop.
And, like,
nerve-wracking.
Yeah. And then to find... I think there's something in the human psyche that when you get selected for something, whether it's a team or a job or even a partnership or relationship, like, when somebody says, yeah, do you know what, we believe in you, there's a massive kind of weight that gets lifted, isn't there?
Yeah. For sure. And you know what? I think the best part about it, like, you know my parents well.
Yeah.
And the day I got the job, so my parents were off in Tenerife, gallivanting for the 2 weeks, and I collected them from Shannon. And we said we'd stop off in the Woodfield House Hotel on the way back for a bit of grub at an old point. And just as we were coming to the end of the show, it's like 2 seconds away, the phone rings. I'm driving their car. So I was like, oh, can I even answer this? Because I have a 2-seater. So I was like, and it's a WhatsApp call. I was like, oh, it's a UK number. Who's this? I'm like, I won't answer it. And I was like, answer the phone. He answers the phone and straight away it's like, oh, how's it going? This is such and such from the URC. We'd like you to offer you the job. My mother's in the car in the back seat going, yes, punching, trying to keep her mouth quiet, kind of going, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very close to my parents, and they've been with me through that journey since day one. And to see the two of them in the car, like, jumping up, like, they're like, it's amazing. Like, it was such a good feeling being able to, you know, if you get that phone call at home, it's still great.
Yeah.
But to get it and experience, like, they got to see me experience getting accepted to the role.
Yeah.
As it happened.
Yeah.
It was class.
Moment, yeah.
It was cool.
Kind of like
really was.
Flying the wall type of moment.
That was
let's,
it. Like.
Let's actually talk. Like, what is the role, though? So that people are aware, because, like, we'll get into the journey, but just give them a kind of a context of what it is that you will be doing.
So I'm coming in as a senior editorial manager. So, you know, anyone that works in the media, and all that's quite broad. So obviously there's going to be writing, there's going to be managing, there's going to be scheduling, there's going to be content, social media. There's going to be a lot of stuff. But it's just, you know, basically do what I do best and talk about rugby, write about rugby.
Jesus.
You know yourself.
You've had a field day of it now the last 8 weeks, in fairness, with the Rugby World Cup.
Absolutely.
It's been brilliant. And then this weekend, obviously, the final. Like, considering that you're in the world of rugby now as well, what's your take, your hot take for the weekend?
I think South Africa are going to beat New Zealand, to be honest with you. Okay. I can't. I just think South Africa play Cup rugby. And that's what they do, and that's what they're best at. And I think Razzie's going to have something up his sleeve. I know they weren't great against England, but England played a very clever tackle game on South Africa. They did a very, and like, kudos to England, like, and it's not often, I don't like saying that, but you have to give them kudos sometimes. Yeah. And they were good. And like, I know it's a boring style of rugby, but there's no such thing as boring rugby. You played rugby all your life. It's cup rugby.
Yeah.
You play to win. Winning. There's no flashy, that's it. You kick your points.
Nobody remembers how you play. Absolutely once they just remember the result.
No. Look at all the World Cups over the years. You look back and some of the big ones, like, and it's always been close. It's been a kick. It's been a Johnny Wilkinson kick, or even go back as far as Stephen Donald getting off a fishing boat, like, and coming in and kicking the winning penalty. That's the kind of stuff you want. It doesn't matter, like, you know, it's still won, still win the World Cup.
You can barely pass the ball, yet he kicks the World Cup winning points.
That's all that gets remembered.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay, so I've known you since you were Gossoon, right? It's absolutely, like, since you were, like, literally knee high to grasshopper type of stuff.
Nappies.
Right? Genuinely, like, when I played rugby in Garryowen, in Limerick, I played with your brothers, and I obviously got to know then myself and your brothers and even your dad. We went on this under 14s trip to Scotland.
Oh, I know the stories of that trip.
Oh my God, yeah. Let's leave that alone. We were only 14, we couldn't get up to too much. But your dad, Ted, like, he was at everything. He was at every game. He was always there. He's like such a brilliant character to be around. And my dad, the two of them would have bonded and become great old mates over the years while we were playing rugby. And you were coming through, and it was always like you kind of running around the pitch, or like you were only a little fella. And then a number of years later, then I'm helping Artscoriche Old Boys. You guys asked me to come on and help with the coaching. I see you, like, you've grown up to be this obviously superman in terms of what you're doing with your business and what you're doing with the media and what you're doing with rugby, and it's like a completely change of perspective. How did you get into, like, rugby's been part of your life, right?
But how did
you get into this world of creating this kind of journey for yourself?
I'll tell you, it goes all the ways back, and it's testament to my parents. So it goes all the ways back to when I think I was around 9 or 10 years of age. I went to Roxburgh, Scotland Spirit Nave, in Ballineety, in Ballysheedy. If anyone's from Limerick, you'd know the school. But I went there, and I remember there was a huge amount of people in that school. I remember when I was in second class, there was like 40-something in the class. So they decided to take like 8 or 9 of us and put us forward to do third class twice. So we got pushed ahead. And what they did is they kind of had this thing where that school has plenty of money, and they kind of had a bit of an experiment where they gave the students laptops. So we all got laptops, and I was like, just took on to it massively. And within a year, there used to be like, the intercom would go off, and the principal would call me to the office. And I was like, Jason, can you go down and sort this? And I'd go down and fix the computers and go down and like figure out the DVD players and stuff. I just became a tech whiz, because it was just something I enjoyed.
Yeah.
My mother then spotted that. My mother at the time, she worked for Analog Devices. And there was a guy working inside there, he was the tech guy, and he lived out in Shannon. He used to build computers. So she went away and goes, I'm going to buy Jason a computer. So she went off and bought this computer. I'm not joking. It was like a spaceship. I wish I still had it. That's how big the units were back then, with this big monitor like the size of a Fiat Punto. She paid like £2,000 for this thing back then, like, because not many people had computers. So she got me that, like, and obviously I lived out in the countryside, so I played a lot of sports. I played rugby and I played soccer and whatever. I played a small bit of GA and stuff. But like, you'd have an awful lot of free time. So the two things I used to do was play Football Manager, and then I used to just kind of fiddle and just kind of go, okay, what can you do? Because there wasn't much you could do then, because you didn't even have internet, because you only had dial-up. So you were allowed to go on the internet for an hour from 6 to 7. That was it. And it was really slow, and you'd use that hour to...
the hour to actually dial in.
Use that hour to download one song. That was the plan. But then
I used to have Napster.
That was it. But I found out that kind of like, there's this thing called Windows Movie Maker. And I used to start, like, there's three things I was big into. It was rugby, soccer, and wrestling. And I used to make like videos of like The Rock and Stone Cold, and I'd make videos of, like, Brian O'Driscoll and Keith Wood. And I started making all these videos, and like I still have them on a hard drive. It's about 150 videos. Kept making them, and then I started making kind of graphics and stuff, and I started fiddling on Photoshop, and I was like, just I'm kind of half good at this. And then I created my first website. I was 13 years of age. It was called Fight Sport Entertainment. Kind of brought all my three things together. I was like, okay, UFC, WWE, and rugby, and that was the site. I think the first article I wrote was something about John Jones being a guy to watch out for. That was old long ago. Like, this is like, now he just, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, like, you're talking, like, Jesus, I mean, what, I'm 34 now. So that's 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
He's been going for 15 years now. Obviously, he hasn't been playing for a long time or fighting for a long time, but he's back now against Stipe Miocic now in a couple of
weeks. He's after pulling out.
Oh, has he?
He's after pulling out only this
morning.
See,
this is why you're in the sports scene.
Only this morning he pulled out. Something to do, he tore something bad. I think he might have tore his pec or something.
Okay.
Something nasty anyway, and that's because I'm actually five of my friends have all the flights booked to go over to New York, over to watch a class fight, and it's called off, and it's getting replaced by, I can't remember what's taking the spot, but sickener, really, like.
Yeah.
It's a sickener, because I was really looking forward to that fight. Everyone was.
The promos for that, Anyway, sorry, so you created Fight Sport.
Created Fight Sport, and then that kind of, that did well for a while, like, but like, this was like, you know, so I used a program called Dreamweaver. I don't know if anyone still uses
I've
that.
I've heard of that.
So Dreamweaver, you were able to build a website offline, so you're able to do everything, but it was really slow, like really slow. There was a small bit of coding, and I used to just kind of, I was just figuring it out as I went along. I was just click buttons.
You couldn't get onto YouTube then and check how do you do this?
I just click buttons and hope for the best and go, oh, no, that doesn't do that. Oh, that does that. And then eventually built this like crappy little site and it did fine and everything was whatever. And then that just disappeared for a while and I didn't take any notice of it. And then it was a big moment in my life was, so I broke my hand 2 weeks before the Leaving Cert, right? And
strategic.
No, it wasn't. Well, it wasn't strategic. It was just a drunken idiot mistake.
Okay.
Broke my hand while I'm messing on a night out. And I ended up doing my Leaving Cert to a tape.
Okay.
Right? And no one had done it before, so they were completely unprepared for it.
Yeah.
I remember the day of my first exam, the vice principal had to bring me down to the shop to buy tapes. And I'm like, my exam is on a half an hour. Like, and I was like, you better give me extra time back for this. Yeah. Didn't even have tapes.
Yeah.
So I did that, did my Leaving Cert. I ended up missing out on my course by 10 points. Right, I remember I wanted to do some course in UL. It was business and something. I missed out on that.
Better off.
It's better off. But then I went off then and I went back and I went to LIT and I did accounting for a year because I did well in accounting in school. So I'll do that. I hated it.
Yeah.
Imagine me being an accountant. You know, it's certain people are suited to accountancy.
It is the typical default though, isn't it? Business or accountancy, especially if you don't know what you want.
Yeah. It's a job. You're like, it's a good job. It's done.
At least if you get the accountant piece, you have some sort of understanding of how to. The finances would run in the business, right? But outside of that, if you don't really have the passion for it,
I hated that. It was miserable. And I went off and I kind of dropped out. I didn't even go to college. I barely went. All I did was drink. Do you know what I mean? Like a first year. But I dropped out of that. And then I just kind of fell back into chefing. I got lazy. The brothers had a restaurant. There's a handy job there. It's good money at that age.
I remember you in one of them. I remember seeing you or meeting you when you were coming out when we were having a bit of grub or something.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely cooked here before, 100%. Yeah. I can cook for most people in Limerick, I'd say.
The one probably on the Condell Bridge.
Yes. I worked in there for a good while, but I did that for ages. And I remember we went off on a J1. I was able to go off on a J1 and I went over to Ocean City, Maryland. I was over there for 4 months and I had the best crack ever. Because I remember the first thing I got offered when I was over there was a chef job. And I was good money. I was like, I'm not doing chefing. I ended up working as a bouncer in an underage nightclub. I had great crack for the 4 months. Then I came back and I'm all kind of like, this is fucking like, what am I doing? Like, I have to go back into a smelly kitchen. This is crap. And then bear in mind, go back to the fact that I was a smart kid in school, but like only for that broken hand thing, like I'm missing out. Like, and I'm all of a sudden like, why are you just like, all of a sudden going back to, no offense to chefs out there, look, it's a grand job. But like, I knew it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And I knew I could be better. I knew I was meant for more.
Yeah.
So then I kind of ended up moving in with my friends in Castle Troy, and all my good friends were in college. And I used to come home from school, come home from work, and the lads would come in the door from college, and I'm kind of sitting there going, why the fuck aren't you in college? What the hell's wrong with you? And it like put me down a really dark place of depression where I was just kind of like, I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't want to be in this world anymore. I was so depressed, kind of like, it's kind of like, and I felt like in my head, do you know when you're younger, kind of stupid, thinking, but you're like, you're 23 now, like, it's too late. Not like, That was the point. And a lot of people have that mentality.
Of course they do.
And I came home, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, but they do, because it's like there's so much pressure because they look at the peers, they see that they're on a path that they would like to be on, or there's some, we spend a lot of time focusing on what we don't have instead of what we do have.
Yeah.
And it can send us into a dark place.
So yeah, that happened anyway. And then I remember I moved home then and my mother was like, look, you need to stay at home for a while. You need to get your shit together. You need to cop on. You're not leaving this house for a while. I was like, what the fuck am I going to do now? So back to the 13-year-old into his little office at home. The computer is still there. We'd upgraded that stage to a little a little black Dell computer at that stage. So it was a little bit better. And
Pentium processor.
That was it. Oh yeah, Pentium 2 or Pentium 3 had all the nooks and crannies and all that stuff. But yeah, that kind of there. And I remember, like at this time now, there still isn't any big rugby sites out there. Mm. I think the only site out there at the time was Rugby Dump. And that was the only site I clicked on. And it was two things I used to always go on to. And it was Unilad and Rugby Dump. I was like, Rugby Lad. Why doesn't someone do that? But I went straight on to the domain. I was like, see if I can buy it. I was like, no one has bought this. And I kept doing research. I was like, this site doesn't exist. Why doesn't someone know this? This is such a cool name. Strangers bought it, did it, designed up a logo. The same logo that we use now is the same one from that day. It took me about 5 or 6 hours. I think I was up till 5 o'clock in the morning designing this logo.
Yeah.
That's all I had.
State of flow,
was it. All I needed was a logo. Everything else is going to follow after that.
Yeah.
Do you know, I'd figure it out. Now, bear in mind, there wasn't even Instagram back then. Twitter was around. The Facebook didn't really have paid business pages. It had like become a fan and all this kind of stuff, or add someone as a friend as a profile. It wasn't really there. So I just kind of, no one was doing rugby memes or anything like that. So I started off just doing that. Build the profile, slowly got taken off. And then that was 2012. 2013 then was the Lion Store in Australia. Now I remember that was the year that O'Driscoll got famously dropped by Gatland. And I remember, like, no one, I don't even know if I've ever told this story before because I never revealed to anyone, but do you remember there was a massive campaign called Justice for Bod?
Yeah.
And it was all over the news and everything. I created that page.
Did you?
And it got 100,000 likes in 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
A page, like 100,000 likes in 24 hours. To get that now was incredible. To get that back then is, like, absolutely phenomenal. So that took off, and then I pushed all the traffic, and I started making money off the site. I kept crashing the site, and I was like, Jesus Christ, there's something here. So then I spent a couple of years then just kind of, like, building it up and working on it and trying to fix the site. I said I crashed it and cried about 1,000 times because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just YouTubing, figuring it out. And then by around during this now, I went back to college. So I went back to college in 2013.
Okay.
And that was the day I remember I went in to do a course, New Media and English. And I forgot even though I didn't finish the course. So in Ireland, you only get 4 free years of education. Right, so the other year, so if you've used a year, you have to pay like full college fees for the other one. So I didn't know that. And I remember going into college up into UL and filled everything out, got accepted, did all the stuff, blah, 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 blah. Went up and got to the very last point where you're just about to get your ID card. And he's like, you have to pay like fees. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you have to pay full fees. Like, you only get 3-4 years you've used a year in LIT. I was like, oh shit. No, I had no money at the time. My parents, like, this was around the time where like my parents weren't rich. They weren't poor, but they weren't rich. Like, and I remember vividly walking out the door into the green in UL. I just burst out crying. And I fell on my knees and I rang my mother and goes, Mom, I can't go to college. She was like, shut the fuck up, you're going to college.
Yeah.
And like, there's this, this testament, how good my mother is.
Oh, yeah.
The following day, my mother went out to the credit union, took out a loan for, I think it was 7,000 or 8,000 euros and paid for my college, put me back to college, that thing. Like, and it was like, probably the best thing she's ever done for me.
You've mentioned two moments there where your mum stepped in was when you came home.
Yeah.
She says you're not leaving.
Yeah.
So by doing that, you had to find a way to fill the time and you went back into the world and create a rugby latch, right?
Yeah.
So that's as a catalyst of your mom saying you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden then you're stuck and you're not getting a chance to go to college where you've probably thought about that for so long.
Yeah.
And then you can't go and your mom was like, no, to head of high water, you're going to college.
Yeah.
What a hero.
Yeah.
Like, what's your relationship like with your mom?
Oh, my best friend. Yeah. My mother and my father are my two best friends.
Yeah.
Like, my dad comes into my house 7 days a week just for a coffee.
Yeah.
Just say hello, because Ted. That's the way he's like. He just comes in for a coffee every day. Either we go for coffee, or in the even times, whatever time it is, we go for a pint. Just, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'd be just as excited to go for a pint with my dad as with my best friends.
How important is this? How important are they to the stage you are now in your career?
Oh, I wouldn't be anywhere. I'd be a bouncer or a chef. That's what I'd be. I'd be doing nothing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be anywhere. I wouldn't have any degrees. I wouldn't have any job. I wouldn't be doing anything. Like, I'd just be getting by. Just be living. I'd just be another number.
Yeah.
Just, that's what I'd be like only for them. Like, I owe them the world.
What do you define as success?
Happiness.
Okay.
Not something to do with money. It's success is, do you get up in the morning and not want to go to work? Like, I remember being a chef, and I remember there was times where I used to drive around the block 4 times because I didn't want to go into work. Now I get up in the morning and I can't wait to get to work.
Yeah.
First thing I do is open the phone and check my emails, going, okay, what's happening? Any news? Any rugby? Anything good happening? Let's go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Buzzing, like,
They're buzzing.
But the energy you bring off, like you're genuinely happy about what's going on in life right now. Like, you're genuinely, because like what I find is that a lot of, so I would find days pretty tough. Some days pretty tough. Some days brilliant, right? And ups and downs. But I'm still super optimistic about life. And I believe the difference between optimism and positivity is that allow yourself to have that tough time, but know that tomorrow will be a bit better. Whereas positivity doesn't allow you to do that. You always have to be positive. Always have to be beyond.
I wouldn't be always positive now. I have my bad days as well. But
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I use it.
Yeah.
Use it,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. So the energy, you're genuinely buzzing about this. And I'm sure there'll be trials and challenges when it comes into the future and what you do in your career and stuff. That's fine. But you're relishing the challenge, which comes across through the conversation you're having there.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's kind of one of the reasons, like, I kind of wanted to move, because I'm one of those guys, I don't know whether I have ADHD or what it is, but I need to have something in front of me. I need to be going all the time. Do you know, some people find that where they might go to the gym, they might go do Ironmans and running. I need to be kind of challenged mentally. I need to be doing something creative. I need to be writing or making a video or doing a podcast or doing something. I need to be doing something all the time. Because if I don't, and I'm left with myself and my own thoughts, it's not good, and it's not a good place to be, because if I don't have something to look forward to, it just kind of makes me go, well, what's the point? Like,
does that, so by doing something all the time as well, though, are you avoiding something?
No, not really. I mean, look, I live alone. Like, I live in a house on my own, like me and my two dogs. So I have plenty of time to myself.
Yeah.
But it's not that I have plenty of time to kind of look back at myself, and I know where I need to work on and where I don't need to work on. And I still have my, as I said, I still have my good days and my bad days. But like, that's kind of like, it's kind of like my fuel. Like, you know, I need a bit of fuel, otherwise the engine can't get going at all.
And you get your fuel then by having things to do, by looking forward to having a full day, like, you know, having to know that you have to sort out rugby lad, you know that you have a World Cup final coming up, that there's going to be plenty to talk about in that, there's going to be plenty of things for you to create, to cut through and to have an impact on people, because I think the Justice for Bod site had a massive impact. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about it. News picked it up. Everybody picked
it
up.
Yeah.
And you created that and had an impact. So it must be a good feeling to know that you are nearly curating some of the narrative.
It still blows my mind, because like people don't realise that it's just me doing Rugby Lad.
Yeah.
Right. I have a couple of guys that write and do stuff for me, but it's basically like 99% me. And like over the last 6 weeks, like that website was viewed 6 million times and it reached almost 80 million people. And this is just one guy sitting in an office in Limerick. And to me, it's kind of like, sometimes you have to take a step back and pinch yourself going, you created this. How has this got to what it's got like? And then you meet people out and stuff, and you're like, and they know, they recognize you. You're like, you're a rugby lad. And you're like, I was coming across the bridge there not that long ago. It was during the Munster final between Limerick and Clare. I remember I couldn't get tickets and I was on a date. It was the first date. It was so right. We were coming over the bridge. And I couldn't get tickets. We were going to town to watch it. And this guy just shouts across the road, Rugby Lad! She's like, no, who's this guy? I was like, oh.
Was there a second date?
Just about.
But it's just kind of like, everyone's wondering. Tell me, what, considering like you're on the crest of a wave now at the moment, and like there's, as you said, it started 20 years ago, right?
2012, so yeah, Rugby Lads, yeah, the whole journey started 20 years ago, Rugby Lads started then, whatever, 10, 11 years ago.
Yeah, so like, what has been the biggest challenge that you've faced to date?
Oh, that's a good question, that's a tough question. I think it's...
And it can be, like, professionally, personally, whatever.
I'd say probably personally, dealing with the highs and lows, as in, like, I don't appreciate the highs enough. So what happens to me sometimes is... If the side is doing incredibly well and you're laughing, like sometimes you open the phone and you're laughing going, there's just 2,000 people on the side at the moment. And I don't even take any notice of the fact that this is absolutely incredible. But then if there's no one on the side, then I beat myself up about it. Like kind of going, why aren't you doing well this one? And that's the biggest challenge, that sometimes it's not always going to be champagne and roses. There's not, like, if every day was fantastic, then how could you define the difference between good and bad? You have to have the bad days to appreciate the good days, because then you can't tell the difference.
So would you say that your challenge is just how to give yourself a bit of a pat on the back and be good to yourself? Is that a challenge for
you? And more so the fact that some days you're going to get up and you're going to have a shit day. And like whether it be personally or whether it be professionally, you could be going through a breakup, something could happen at home, something could happen in your business. But like trying to deal with that, like, and that is, it's easy to say it. Everyone says it, like, and you listen to podcasts, you watch shows, everyone's like, you know, just do this, just do that. Go to the gym, do that. We've all tried it. Sometimes you can go to the gym, you can go for a run, you can work, you can have whatever. Sometimes you're just going to have a shit day and things aren't going to work out for you. And you're going to feel like absolute crap. You're going to have anxiety. You're going to get that tightness in your chest. And it's just about getting over it and kind of going, that's the hardest part, I think.
Does that happen to you often?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I do have problems with anxiety. Sometimes you just kind of, you know, I get
how
that
do you
chest.
Manage
it? I just, like, now, I suppose, I don't know. I don't think I still have a full rap on it, to be honest with you. I don't think you ever can. In my opinion, I don't think you can. I think it's just...
I was talking about it. The reason I ask you is because myself and Shane Lennon were talking about that in the last podcast.
Mm.
And I was telling him about a massive anxiety attack that I had. And I don't suffer from generally, but I just had one this year. But he talked about bringing it back to the breath. And he talked about when we breathe, we typically breathe in our chest.
Yeah.
But he said, if you can actually breathe through your belly, right?
Okay.
He said, that's where you start to kind of calm down and you start to kind of, your oxygen starts to go through your body as opposed to just in your chest. Because when you're in your chest, it's all
just
tight.
Short breaths.
It's like an asthma attack. Mm. Even worse, in your chest, it's hurting you. Whereas if you can calm it down, focus on the breath, and where is it? And if it's up here, it's trying to push it down to your stomach. It's a fascinating way of doing it because he talks about it and he's a breath expert and yoga expert. Then I spoke to a Wim Hof instructor who's all about breath work as well and
right.
very, very much about belly breathing, and that type of thing helps to completely relax the body. So removing tension from your neck all the way down. It's fascinating. So it's definitely something that if you haven't got a handle on it, maybe there's just in the breath work, when you do get that anxiety attack or you get that feeling of overwhelmness or whatever it is, that you go, okay, where's my breath? It's in my chest. Okay, just let's push it to my belly, and then that'll start to help your body reset.
Because you feel it, your throat gets tight, then it comes out here, and it's all concentrated in that one area, and you're sitting there kind of going, okay, what the hell is wrong with me?
Yeah.
And it's
unexplainable.
Oh, like everyone, as far as I'm concerned, everyone in their life has had one at some stage, whether it be a mini one and they don't even realize it.
Yeah.
Like if you have a big, sometimes very people, I think, or not everyone would have a big one.
Yeah.
When you have a big one, you know, as you said, you had that one. When you had it, you know, shit.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Right. Like, I genuinely thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Do you know what I mean?
I was just turned, about to turn 40, and I was there going, oh. Here we go.
That's it. It's been a good run.
I couldn't smell any burning toast, so I was like, "It might be okay."
No tingling in the left arm.
I have another minute or two, but like genuinely, that was the way my whole my mindset just went into catastrophization or whatever it is, and then I went, "Oh, okay, hold on, just calm down."
Yeah.
And it got there eventually, but I think that you're dead right. People do have different things that they're going through that creates that anxiety, but not necessarily know that they are having an anxiety
That's
issue.
It. I've only ever had one that was like really bad that I knew, like you said there, and I was in college, I was in a tutorial, and I don't know what set it off, but the lecturer asked me a question, and I knew the answer. And all of a sudden, it was like, you know when you see them, they try and show you it in a movie. I just kind of got white noise and the whole room went black. And I'm just kind of looking at it and it's like, and I'm like, what the fuck's wrong with me? And I just feel my heart going, boom, 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 boom. And I was like, I couldn't answer. And she's like, are you okay? She has something wrong with me. I couldn't talk. And this went on and it felt like an hour. It was probably 10 seconds, maybe less.
Yeah.
And it was just probably
scary,
the worst.
Though.
It's frightening. You've like, I felt like something, as you said, like you, I felt like something was actually physically happening to me.
Yeah.
But it's, but like it is similar symptoms
to
like a heart attack or something like that.
So let's talk about, we've gotten to a stage where Rugby Lad is becoming a bit of a phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
In that you're seeing traction. When did you really kind of know that this is going to have a bit of an impact? Because as you said, 2012, you set up the
2012,
the bod,
yeah.
You did the bod thing,
2013,
right?
2013,
right? But then how did you know Rugby Lad was going to be a success, or that there was an appetite for it? And then how did you actually turn that from a personal project into a commercial
to a business
entity?
So there's a good story behind that as well. So obviously when I finished that course, I went up and took a job with Legacy Communications. It's Bernard Brogan's company.
So
I worked for them. That was actually brilliant for me because I was only there for a few months. I came out of college and straight up there. The reason I ended up coming home is there was a sickness in the family, and to be honest with you, I missed the girlfriend as well.
Okay.
And it was very tough for me living on my own in Dublin. So I was there a while, but it was a huge experience for me because Remember, I came from a chefing background. Mm. I'd never sat in an office before. I'd never answered emails. I'd never been in, you know yourself, it might sound straightforward, but if you come into an office environment at the age of, you know, 24, 25, 26, it can be tough because everyone else is in it since they're 17, 18, out straight out, and it's tough. And it was a really good experience for me, and I really enjoyed my time there. Like, and, you know, thanks to Bernard and James that were in there. But I came home and I remember it was Anthony Foley died, and then Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time that year. And I kind of tipped away in Chicago, yeah. And I was tipping away, and my mother was like, you have to get a job. And I was like, man, there's no media jobs in Limerick. I can't find one. So then I was just kept doing research. Okay, how do you monetize this? And I found all these things you could just sign up for. And then I figured out Google Ads. Same again. It's all trial and error. I knew I had the traffic because I knew the site was doing well. You can see that yourself. And then I started figuring out analytics and all that. Same again, trial and error. And I'll never forget, I turned on to my mother, and one day she's like, you have to get a job. I said, ma'am, I don't think I have to get a job. She's like, why? And I just turned over the computer, like, and I'd made five figures that month. She was like, I don't think I need a job anymore, ma'am. She's like, it's like, how, that rugby lad? I was like, yep.
No way.
Yeah. And I remember October we beat Chicago. Yeah. We beat New Zealand, Chicago.
Yeah.
And then the November International Series came. We had that big game at home against the All Blacks. And I just capitalized that. I used to get up every morning. I used to get into my mother and father's sitting room. And I remember it was really cold. My parents' house, they didn't have insulation and properly done at the time. And I used to light the stove and sit down. I used to spend all day inside the sitting room just writing and putting up stories. And by January then, I'd made enough money that I'm going to get an office inside the town. So I went in, got the office, and I just used to get up every morning on my own. Like, you had to be disciplined. Get up at 8 o'clock every morning, be in the office for half 8. I'd stay there till 6. And then I'd come home then, and I'd probably have two more over that anyway. Like, I just did it. Anytime we went out with the lads, the lads were like, you put that laptop at home. I'd come in the door with the laptop under my arm. If we went to the pub, the laptop was under my arm. Because if a story broke, I had to be ready. Because remember, I'm on my own. The only advantage I have is the fact that this is mine. And no matter the harder I work, the more I make. So I'm not like a guy who's just on a salary who's sitting in an office. I'm willing to work more noon and night. So if there's one thing I can do, I can outwork the big businesses. And that's how I can catch up with them. So I just did it non-stop, religiously for how many years? So from 2016 up to 2020. And that's when I got noticed. How I got the Joe job actually is hilarious.
Go on. So
how I got the Joe job was the guys that were coming in taking over Joe. It was Liam Harrington is a guy. He's one of the founders of Unilat. So at the time I was going out with my missus. So I never on Instagram. Like, I'm on Instagram a good bit now, because when you're single, you're on Instagram a lot, because you need to be on Instagram.
To show your best life.
Of course you do. Of course you do. That's the whole point of it. It's like putting yourself out there. Hey,
this
look,
might make
hey,
Instagram,
look, date
it?
Me. Do you know, that's how it works. Like, but I never ever watched it. So he'd sent me a message, and it was in my inbox, in my like message request for about 6 months. And then I went on to it one day or something, like, to check something. And I was like, oh, this guy's offering me a job. he's like, oh, I've noticed your work. He goes, do you want to come in and be our head of rugby and stuff? I was like, this must be bullshit. So this went on then for like, there was like, talks back and forth for like 6 months, because initially they wanted to buy it.
They wanted to buy rugby.
Yeah, but I was like, I'm not selling it, because the offer was decent, but it was the best way to put it, it's like selling your child.
Yeah.
It's like unless it was an absolutely astronomical figure, which it wasn't, you know, it would have to be retirement money.
Yeah.
I couldn't sell it. So eventually then, after like 8 or 9 months of negotiation, it was like, okay, you just come in, we just want to hire you. Because I turned down the job twice. They were like, we really want to hire you. So I just ended up taking the job. And then ended up being there for, 3 years?
And so the role there for people to understand, like when you say head of rugby, like what did that mean?
So it's kind of funny. So I came in initially as the head of rugby, and it was initially like I wasn't supposed to be writing or anything. It was just kind of managing social media, building up Rugby Joe. So Rugby Joe was kind of sitting there. It was stagnant for a while. It had like 430,000 followers, but there was only like a post a week, two posts a week going up in it. So the first job was to go in and fix that. But then a couple of weeks in, then they were like, you used to do a podcast. So I did a podcast during COVID with Jamie Heaslip. Myself and Jamie kind of go back. We know each other. And like, we're two of us are bored. We said, we'll do a podcast. It's called The Up and Under Podcast. I think we did 22, 23 episodes. Did well. They were like, oh, you did a podcast before. Do you want to do a show? And I was like, I don't know about that now. Go back to the mother again. So I'm at home and they ring me on the, we'll say the Friday. And this is House of Rugby. This is a big show that's established for 10 years. That's filmed in a television studio. And I'm like, I can't do that. My mother's like, why can't you? And I'm like, I can't go there, dude. Go away, will you? I've never done that before. Why not? You have to start somewhere. Yeah. So then he goes, all right, so I'll do it. But I was only supposed to be like a correspondent. So I get a phone call in. So we're filming on a Sunday. I get a phone call on a Saturday. Right, we want you to be the presenter and anchor. I was like, what? I can't do that. She's like, don't start me now again, you're doing it. Next morning, you're up in this big studio. It's where Premier Sports film and all that stuff. You're in this big studio. You've got two earpieces. One's the director, one's the producer. You've got camera one, two, three, four, five. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this? Plus, I ended up doing 50 episodes of it. And it flew, and I just took like a duck to water. After three or four episodes, I flew into it.
That's the thing, isn't it? You got like getting out of your comfort zone is so important, isn't it? Anything that you're trying to do in life.
It's horrible, but I know everyone says it. Like, I can tell you straight, like, I'm not bullshitting you. I was that guy that, I don't know how many times I turned down things because I was so happy in my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Like, even now, like, I didn't have to go and try and go for this URC stuff. I didn't have to go. I could just sit home and hide and be rugby lad and make a decent living, pay my mortgage and be happy. But if I get now outside my comfort zone, now I can be even more.
Yeah.
And I hid my comfort zone for a long time. So if I can get out of it, I'm pretty sure anyone can get out of it.
What do you say to people who are comfortable? Like, as in, who are, like, listen, there's nothing wrong about being comfortable, and there's nothing wrong about being like having a steady 9 to 5 and doing that. Like, not everybody has the same types of ambition. And you go back to me asking you about success, and you're saying happiness. Like, that could be happiness, like looking after your family, getting a nice pay job and doing all that. But what do you say to those who are ambitious but still in the comfort zone? Like, how would you kind of nearly, what advice would you kind of nearly pass on to them to maybe help them be a catalyst for them to do something?
The big one is, like, if you get rejected, there's always the next opportunity. I don't know how many, I've been rejected hundreds of times. I've applied for loads of jobs, I got rejected for, I've been rejected for college courses, rejected for this. I've had so many, but rejected by women, as we all have. I've been rejected by so many things, but like, you just get up, as in, like, it's not a rugby phrase, next ball. Next ball,
we used to actually say that on the team when I played with St. Mary's, we used to go in next play, something will go wrong and you go next play, and that's actually the same kind of thing for life, right?
Yeah, next ball.
It is gas, because I set up my own consultancy there in marketing and sponsorship and sports comms, and I started that in July, and I'm slowly building. But like, somebody said to me, he said, does it feel like you're free falling at the moment? And I said, yeah, it does. And he goes, yeah, well, he said, that's what will make you keep going, you know, because like, when you own something like that, to your point about working that little bit extra and doing that bit more,
yeah,
because it's yours, it's your name behind it, essentially.
That's
you
it.
You want to make sure that it's a success.
Yeah.
And I also think then that when it comes to trialing things, like, man, it's like, again, the sport analogy, a coach mightn't like you, but you go to another team and they think you're a superstar.
Yeah.
Do you know, that coach might think you're amazing. And that's the same thing when it comes to business. Like, everybody has their own ways of working. You might get on with some, but you mightn't get on with others.
Of course.
That's fine.
That's normal. That's life.
But don't stay in this situation where you're not.
If you're not happy. Yeah, if you're not happy, like, and yourself, you're just there kind of like, like, as in, as you said, some people like their job. I'm not giving all people that are in a kind of boring 9 to 5. If that's you, that's you.
Yeah.
But if you're unhappy in that and you have a passion, you think, maybe I can do that. And like, do what I did. Like, you don't necessarily have to just quit your job. You can do it on the side if you've got the work ethic. Mm-hmm. Like, as in, like, do you know, there's 24 hours in a day. You only sleep for 8 of them.
Yeah.
You work for 8 of them.
Yeah.
So there's another 8 there, like. Do you know what I mean? If my maths are correct, so they're on their own.
3, 8, 24.
There you go. See, I'm just doubting myself now for no reason. But there you go. Like, so there's all that time. And I used to do it. Like, and I used to just post stuff. And on my break, I'd be posting stuff on my phone. And when I got home, I'd post stuff up in the morning. I still had to go in and do it. And chefing was, you have to be in the kitchen at 1 o'clock. You didn't get out till 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, but anytime I got a spare chance to do something, I just kept tipping away, and it slowly got there. And now I've got no regrets. Well, actually, I do have regrets, but...
Yeah, but like, it is consistency. So if you talk about, just to touch on that, you say you have regrets. Like, what regrets do you have?
Standard regrets. Everyone has regrets. I mean, there's certain things, if I could go back and change certain things, maybe I would. But then at the same time, you know, I don't know, how does the whole timeline work with Back to the Future? If you do change things, does it change? If you can't change the future, if you can't change the past, that's the Avengers, isn't it? I'm not sure. I don't know how it works, but I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't, but I suppose everyone has got regrets. Yeah, well,
that's and I think you're right. I think, so there's this guy, Alan Watts. You ever hear of him? He was a philosopher back in the 70s, right? He's long gone now. And you actually kind of would hear some of his talks on different videos and stuff. But one thing he always says is that choices, he says, you look at all the choices that you made to get to where you are today.
Yeah.
He said, you, like, where you are today is where you're meant to be. So all the choices that you used to get to this point, they were decisions that you made. And he talks about choices being like hiccups. They pop up when you least expect them, is the whole point of it. And he said, when you get a choice, straight away you know what the answer is. You know what to do.
Yeah.
But we go off and gather all this information to see if this is the right thing to do. Should I do it? Talk to mates, get information from family, go and research and do all that. But ultimately, when it comes back to it, like how many times you've gone to a mate of yours and said, man, don't go near. Just stay away from her. Stay away from her. But he does it anyway.
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't matter because he's made the choice.
Yeah, of course he has.
They've made that decision.
Yeah, you know? Let him make that choice.
And that's it.
Let him learn from it.
You have to learn from it then. Yeah, and then it gets to where you are now. So he said, we are here because of all the choices we made. So there's no point in having regrets.
Yeah. I'm not a religious person, but I do. And I've had, because I have so many like examples, even like two, I'll give you two recent examples, but I'm a firm believer of everything happens for a reason. So like two most recent ones for me was like, I was in a relationship for 10 years with a girl. And like, you know, not a bad thing to say about her, just we grew apart. COVID made us, we spent a lot of time together in COVID and we grew apart. You know, that's life. Mm-hmm. You know, she's happy now, I'm happy now. But I remember like we bought a house and we lived over in Raheen. I never wanted to live there. All I wanted to live my entire life, I wanted to live on the Ennis Road. That's mm-hmm. where I wanted to live. That's where, so because I was always out in Fenimore, I ended up going to art school because my mother wanted me to go to good school. Same again, my mother used to get up, Ted, they used to drive me at 7:30 in the morning
to school.
Art school
alumni here as well.
Do you know what I mean? And like, that was a good school, and it is a good school.
And we still have a great group of lads, man, that are still involved in the rugby and stuff now. So
it's a fantastic school. Yeah. It's a fantastic school. I wouldn't say, when people always give out about school, I wouldn't say a bad word about that school because that school made me the man I am today. And if I didn't go there, I don't think I'd be as successful as I am now because it was a brilliant school. Yeah. Fantastic school. Look at the two of us, two great alumni that are doing well for ourselves because of that school. But because I went to that school and I met all my friends out there, and I was actually born in Cardavon, but I lived in Fenimore. My dream was, imagine I got to live here. Because I remember I couldn't get lifts. I couldn't go in and see the lads because all the lads were there.
Yeah.
And then I, like 6 months got in, I bought a house there.
In
Farnshawe.
Oh, did you?
Just around the corner. So I fulfilled my dream.
Yeah.
That was my dream. Sure, it's not a mansion or anything, but it's the house where I want it.
You did what you said you were going to do.
And that breakup led to that now. Yeah. And I'm happier for it. And I'd say she's probably happier as well because we were in one of those relationships where you're just in it because you don't want to be single.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't a good match. And COVID, I think, did that. Like COVID either brought people closer together or made them drift apart because all of a sudden, you're looking at that person 24/7. You don't get up in the morning and go to work. You don't get off to training. You don't go off your way. You're with each other. And you're like, we're not a very good match, are we?
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people realize that, yeah, I think.
And I think the ones who realize it are happier. The ones who realize it and didn't make any decisions are stuck.
That's right? It.
And they each to their own. You said you had, there was two examples.
The two. And the other one then is Joe. So like the opportunity to leave Joe and had redundancy. Like I had a very kind of like happy number there. I love doing the show. I did the show with like a really good friends with Greg O'Shea and Lindsay Pete. I miss doing the show with them. Pat McCary, I worked with, got really great with Pat. I miss that. I was happy, had a good wage. My job was so easy, I could do it with my eyes closed. Not so easy. It became so easy because I was doing it so long.
Yeah.
It was just so easy to me. Like it was just I could do my job with my eyes closed. And to take that leap and go, do you know what? I can do better because I'm not getting challenged anymore. And I took that leap. And now look at me now. Now it's after working out where I had the most successful World Cup in the history of rugby, lad, and now a job at URC.
Mm.
So that's everything happened for a reason.
Yeah.
And I took, and same again, I got out of the comfort zone and go, fuck it, just go for it. Because
yeah.
you're not happy. Like, and I remember my brother said to me, he goes, I knew you had to go from there because you weren't being challenged anymore. And if you're not challenged, you're not happy.
Mm.
That's what I need.
That's interesting, isn't it? The way you link happiness to having a challenge.
Yeah. Some people go off and do Ironmans, some people go to the gym and stuff. Like, another thing, like, that was another thing, I know people, it's a simple old thing, but it's not just hard work. I never ever was a big person in the gym. It's like the last 12 months, like I spent 12 months, I went to the gym 4 or 5 days a week, and that gave me more energy and more time, like made me more motivated to do stuff. That's a huge part as well.
I actually find that the gym helps just with my head.
Yeah. Oh, my
mental health is better as a result of me training.
Yeah.
I think I'm a better person to be around as a result. Like my missus might say to you differently, but I genuinely think like it's just part of my habit now. 7 o'clock every morning, boom, in the gym, and it becomes seamless.
But it releases endorphins. It's natural. I remember getting in counselling years ago. I remember the counsellor said to me, she goes, "Do you exercise?" I said, "I do, of course." He said, "Well, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, like you know, I walk the dogs like twice a day." Like you walk the dogs. Like what else do you do? Well, I go to the gym the other time. Do you exert yourself? So what do you mean? Like do you exert yourself? Do you get your heart rate up to a certain like over 120, 130 for at least 20 minutes a day? It's like, no. Well, then you're not exercising.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you need. You need that endorphin. You need to actually physically exert yourself. Not just, everyone thinks if they go walk the dogs in the evening, that's their exercise. And it's great. Come here, get out and walk, get out and do. But you do 2 or 3 times a week need to actually exert yourself. Build up a sweat, like, you know what I mean?
It is interesting you say that, because there's that you can get to a point where you're just going through the motions and you're doing the lifts, you're doing the walks, you're doing the runs, whatever it is, and you can do them.
Yeah.
But you're not really
exerting yourself.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think it's when you get to that point of absolute misery.
Yeah. And you feel your heart and you're sore and you're but then as soon as you walk out the door, it's just like, you're like this out the door.
It's so funny. It's so funny. Sometimes when we finish a Metcon, you know, so Imi would come out and she'd be like chatting away and all this stuff. And I'm like, chopper ears, like boom 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 boom. I'm like, I can't talk to you. I cannot talk to you. I gotta just leave it be. I'll talk to you in about 5 minutes. You buy the coffees.
There you go. You buy the coffees. But people don't realize. I know that that you are bollocks like for that period. Yeah. But how good do you feel then?
Yeah.
And then when you kind of like you start seeing results, you're like, Jesus, and you start kind of looking better in your clothes. Like, fuck, I feel damn good.
Yeah.
And I worked hard for it as well.
Yeah.
I did this.
Yeah.
And it gives you, and it like it works. It's not just physical; it is mental more than anything.
So, would you exert yourself then in exercising that quite regularly now?
Yeah, I'd make sure I go to the gym at least 3 times a week, and I'd have to go in and I'd spend a good hour, and I feel if I go 2 days without going, I actually feel uncomfortable.
Nearly.
Kind of sitting there, kind of going.
Yeah.
I feel like shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like shit. Am I fat? Am I fucking? I feel soft. Oh, you feel all. You just feel soft and horrible, and you're get into the fucking gym and go do something.
I saw we were away on holidays, so I proposed there in August.
And congratulations.
We were away on holidays, and the day before I proposed, we met friends of ours, Alan and Selena and their kids and stuff, and we were on the beach, and they took a photo, and I was sitting down on the kind of the sunbeds or whatever it was, and I saw the photo, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's it. Like, sometimes it takes a photo.
Like, oh my god! So then I contacted Darren O'Reilly and Holdsup, and I basically said to him, "Listen, I'm going to do a 10-week challenge." And he goes, "What's the story?" And I said, "I'm going to lose 10 kgs in 10 weeks." And he goes, "And I was like, will you partner with me?" And he goes, "Yeah, we'd love to." So I was like, right now I'm accountable. So
now you have to fucking do it.
I have to do it now. You know, I have 2 weeks to go. But my point is that when it's you need something to trigger you, and then you got a purpose. And I created a purpose for myself.
Yeah.
Because it was like, I need to have, when you train and play sport and stuff, you have a purpose to be better for your teammates.
Yeah.
Or to perform for your pals. Same in the business and in work. If you've got a team around you, you have a purpose to make sure that you are up to speed in the briefs, that you know what needs to be done. You know, there's things like that.
Yeah.
So it kind of helps it helps you keep accountable. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Another 2 weeks to go.
Sure, no, but you're nearly there. Like, what you've lost? I saw your thing. You've lost,
I'm
pretty on target, aren't you?
I've got 3 kgs to go now. So another. So it's basically just water and, sauna.
You can just sauna
every day.
Just do the UFC medicine last week and just absolutely waterload the shit that's out of it. And then
Jesus,
put yourself down to literally a stage where you can't stand, and you probably lose 6 kilos doing that.
Yeah, we look great. So let me just kind of bring you back to one or two things that I always ask this, and it's kind of important, I think, just to kind of, my idea would be, I'd love to put together some sort of book or something at the end of all this with all the different guests and kind of get an idea of what people are saying and how they're approaching things. So there's two kind of questions that I look at. One is, when you were young and you were you grew up in a madhouse, three lads, right, running around the place, and you have a sister as well, did you?
No, it was four lads.
Four lads.
Four boys, even worse.
Jesus, very Joseph. So four lads running around the place going mental, right? But if you were 7 years old, Jason, right? Going back to our chat about choices and regrets and all this stuff, what's the note or the message that you would share with yourself at 7 that maybe would have helped or would not have helped you if you had that advice?
I think I'd find it hard to answer that, but I don't think I could give something to 7-year-old Jason. I don't think there's any point. I think 7-year-old Jason was very happy. 7-year-old Jason was playing a bit of rugby with Gary Owen. He was playing his soccer at regional. He was enjoyed school. I loved going to school. I used to enjoy primary school. 17-year-old Jason now, there's another guy. There's a guy I'd love to go back and talk to. Because 17-year-old Jason kind of, he made work hard for himself. He made work difficult for himself because he got lazy and he became a bit of a messer. And what I used to do is I became more infatuated with what people thought about me than what I thought about myself. And that affected my school, it affected my relationships, it affected everything, because I wasn't fulfilling my potential. And I think in fifth and sixth year, I became more of the class clown. And I used to like let myself be like that, even though I was the smart kid. Because I think maybe is there past kind of things I pushed back with being bullied when I was younger. I was bullied in primary school because I was this size in primary school. It was huge. Everyone thought I was going to be your size. I just stopped growing all of a sudden. But I was bullied for my size. Like, because what would happen is guys would push me and push me around and hit me and stuff. But if I hit back, I was twice the size of them. Mm. And you go to the teacher, and back then it was different. And they're like, oh, but they started on me. And they're like, come on now. You're twice the size of them. And they're like, I literally took 10 punches before I gave one.
Yeah.
And that probably that did affect me. So yeah, maybe back then, maybe I could deal with that a bit differently. Because that was something that was... That's something that affected me, or maybe I shouldn't let it affect me as much, because it affected me then when I was 17 instead. And that was something, but I didn't even realize it affected me until I had counseling a few years back and look back and go, oh,
what was the key takeaway from that counseling piece?
I just forgot. I suppressed most of a lot of things that happened in primary school. You suppress a lot of bad things when you're a kid that you don't even realize, because all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, that happened. I don't remember that.
It's strange because you were a happy kid. Yeah. As you said there a minute ago, but when you spoke about happiness, you said schools and sport, right?
Yeah.
But then there's obviously things that happened as a kid.
Yeah. I loved learning. I loved reading. Like, I mean, I was a bit of a weird kid in terms of like, I was really good. Probably why I am a writer now. I was always very good at spelling and grammar. And the reason I got so good at spelling and grammar is I used to pick up all the labels at home, and I used to read the back of labels. And I used to get, if I found a word, I used to try and put the word into nominations of 2 and 3. And I did it for years, and that maybe it. I take a word. So let's take a word like, let's take Bradshaw.
Okay.
And I take the word. Okay, can I put Bradshaw into 2? So I go B R A D S H A W. Yes, I can do it in 2s. Can I do it in 3s? B R A D S H A. Oh, I can't. There's a W left at the end. That's the way I do it, and I kept doing that, and I used to read things for years and years, and I just became really good at spelling and grammar because of it. So that was happy. I loved studying and I loved playing sports, but then the social side of it upset me because I was a little bit different. Because I was the big tall kid, and it didn't work for me. I got bullied because of it. Like, I got bullied very badly in primary school, like, and it affected me big time. And then it's kind of that brought into, in secondary school, it was a bit different because I was able to play rugby, and it was better.
Okay.
You could play rugby in primary school. Like, there was no sports then in my school. It was basketball and GA, which I didn't play. Okay. I was actually forced to play basketball because of my height.
Okay.
No, I didn't want to play.
Yeah.
That was things that I didn't like. So yeah, so primary school was the best and worst time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And then, so your message to 17-year-old Jason would be what? Don't worry about what others think.
Don't worry about what everyone thinks, like, and like, get the finger out, and like, know that, like, you know, you are well able to do it, like, and do the work. And I didn't do any work, but because I was a smart kid, I could still get B's and C's. But if I put the work in, I would have got the A's.
Yeah.
But I didn't bother my arse putting the work in, because I was like, I can get the B's and the C's.
Those extra 10 points, then there's a whole chance that the world might be totally different for you.
Yeah. But I probably would have been an accountant doing something. I don't know what
that you weren't happy with.
Yeah, or maybe I might have been happy doing that. Who knows? Think in your head, like, yeah. Who knows? Do you know what I mean?
It is for me so interesting to hear that, because a lot of people that I'm talking to now, some people are saying I wouldn't say anything.
Yeah,
just let them off. And others are like, you're the first person to kind of say, listen, 7-year-old, okay, he's going to figure things out, but 17-year-old,
yeah,
that's a different beast.
Yeah.
And I think every, like, that 17-year-old to where you are now is also a different beast.
Yeah,
we all changed, and like, you were in a 10-year relationship, you've changed from that initial moment to 10 years later, and everybody has to adapt and adjust. And if the relationship stays strong, great. And if they don't, that's okay too. We're in a modern world.
Of course.
The other piece then I ask is, so imagine a billboard. So you're great at writing clickbaits, right?
Telling you, boy, bought me a house.
I might need to get a bit of advice off you, actually, for this podcast.
Telling you, boy, it's all in that headline.
But if you look at the kind of a 48 sheet billboard, and you have, essentially when you're driving past the 48 sheet, you've got like 3 seconds to take in the message, right? This is your message to the world. What would it be?
Be a good person. Just be a good person. There's lots of people in this world that just drive me mad, or they're just not a nice person for no reason. I do my best every day just to try and be a nice person. I don't understand what people get out of being not even like even to a stranger, just being polite, holding a door open, like if someone serves you in a bar or a restaurant, just be nice to them, be courteous to them, just be pleasant. What's the point of being a prick? I don't understand. And there's lots of people, and people that actually enjoy seeing other people fail or do bad. Do you know what I mean? I just don't understand. If one of your friends gets a new job and he gets a job that you wanted, still be happy for him because one of the boys is doing well. Or if one of the lads is after getting something like and he's doing well for himself, be happy because if everyone's doing well, we can all enjoy it together. Like, why do you want one of the lads to be down the bottom and doing shit and you be class and have loads of money and be great? That's no fun because you've no one to experience it with it then. Just be happy and be nice. If everyone was like that, like you're going to have your good days and your bad days. But if you're just a nice person and you get on and you're courteous, and a big thing as well is like, you know, the big thing I'll also look at with that is one thing I would say, as we've mentioned many times in this podcast, is whatever you do, make sure you have a good relationship with your parents. It drives you mad. I see a lot of people that don't have that. Make sure you have that. So like that comes part of being kind. Like you regret the fact if you don't have a good relationship with your parents, because you only have two of them. Like some people only have one of them. Make sure like that's so important to me. Like it's only the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 years where they've become like my best friends. Make sure that's so important. And like I think people, like if you have someone home and if you've got something going on, you'll regret it. Go have a pint with your dad. Go bring your mother out shopping. Go do something with them.
Yeah.
You regret it. Telling you like you're close with your dad, like you know what it's like.
My mum and dad are superstars.
Do you know?
Absolute superstars, and I'm very lucky. And I think some people who don't necessarily or haven't seen my relationship and friendship, I think, don't understand it. So because they don't have maybe as close a relationship with their.
What are you doing? Going to have a pint with your dad? You're like, my dad's great. That's what you think.
I've been so lucky to have, and like they've been going through their own challenges health wise and all that stuff over the last number of years, but. One of my mates said to me, and he lost his dad when his dad was 42 when he passed away, right? And he lost his dad, and he's just after beating his dad's age, right? Of
big.
Being alive,
yeah,
which
that's
was
a
massive
big
thing
to
for him, right? And he looked at me and he said, make sure every time you see your parents, give them a hug, yeah. Right? Because he said, if they're in their 70s now, he says, average expectancy is 75, 80 type of thing. You see them 3 or 4 times a year. How many times are you going to see them? All that type of stuff. He puts it into kind of perspective, you know? So if that's 10 times, 10 years, you see them 3 times, you get 30 chances to give them a hug. You know, that's mental, right? So it's trying to get to the point where you're creating that reason or always, not creating a reason, but you're telling them you love them, give them a hug. Those, they're so influential and so impactful in our lives that when we can't do it, we'll be raging that we can't, you know.
So. I'm seeing that way. Like I would be very close to my grandmother. Like I even have a tattoo and all, like of a lily flower for Lily. Like, and my mother's like, she only died last year. And to see my mother going through it, like, it's so tough for her, like, because that's her mam, and she was very close.
Yeah.
It was her best friend. To see her going through it, you're like, geez, I need to relish every bit of time I have with you because that's going to be me someday,
And
I'm going to have to deal with that. But like, if it happened in the morning right now, if you're the one of them, pass touch wood, like. I could look at myself in the mirror and go, no, I loved them, and I did. I spent the right amount of time with them. I told them I loved them. I hugged them every time. I brought them out. I did everything with them. Do you know, I'm happy. I'm actually content. But 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been.
Interesting.
You know, I don't think I did enough. It's only in the last 10 years I've done enough. Maybe even last 5 even.
Why did it change?
Just when things went through my life and stuff, and things were up and down, like they were always there for me. You know, as I've given you a few different points over the last while, but they've always been there for me, like, and they've pulled me like from the deepest pit so many times.
Yeah,
you when you can see light, like I can just see my mother's hand.
Yeah,
it's always there. Like,
yeah.
So, class. Shout out to Mam.
Yeah,
and Ted.
Mrs. Hayes and Ted. Tell me. So listen, I'm sure people who want to reach out, figure out, get onto Rugby Lad if they haven't been on it.
Yeah.
Reach out to you, maybe ask questions. Like, if there's a lot of things in this conversation that has been really interesting for me to summarize, is like, have a cut, have a go at life, you know, and don't be afraid of what's potentially going to happen or not happen. Just go and give it your best shot and be proud of what you're trying to achieve. And you never know that when you're in a really challenging time, that's probably when you're going to get the best out of yourself. So don't be afraid to try. But if people wanted to reach out to you and get in touch with you, where would they go? How would they do it?
Yeah, just drop an email to info@rugbylad.com or jason@rugbylad.com, and pop me an email and give them a shout. But always remember as well, as you said there, like when you're on a podcast or something like that, like you only have a certain amount of time. So the whole point of it is just to tell all about the good things and all the way you got. But remember, like, there's thousands of rejections. Thousands. I'm sure you've had lots of rejections. I've had lots of rejections. Plenty. You're going to get rejected. Mm-hmm. Very few people. There's some fucking lucky bastards out there that get in on the first go and they just get lucky in life. But like 99% of us deal with at least one rejection. Most of us deal with multiple. And you get them in all facts of life, whether it be professionally or personally. But like, don't just go, off. I failed. Just keep going. Have to give. There's always just, that's the beauty of life. You can keep trying.
Never give up.
You know what I mean? There you go. Never give up. Yeah. That's it.
Well, Jason Hennessy, thank you so much, pal, for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time and good luck with the next chapter in your career. And obviously, keep a rugby lad tipping away.
That's it.
But thanks for coming on.
All good. Cheers, Steve. Be good. Cheers.
Once again, thank you for joining me and taking part in this journey where we talk to people like you and me about what motivates them, what inspires them, and ultimately what makes them tick. I've learned so much from the various conversations I've had, and I hope you can take something from this that you can apply to your life. That's why this podcast has been created. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very thankful for everybody who's joined me so far. Thank you all for listening.